A muskie went down to Medford. He was looking for a lure of steel. He was in a bind because he was blind in one eye that wouldn't heal. When he came across this bucktail stump, he made as a mistake. The muskie swam by a big old stump, said, "Show me what you got." Dick threw that thing out real, real fast. He knew what he had made. It's a muskie teasing, bulging, burning bucktail from the grave. The muskie hit it, made a run, and snapped his line in two. Dick took his rod and cursed aloud and swore he'd quit for good. No muskie has no feeling, but I swear right now to you, he laughing deep inside a dick that looked stuck in his tooth. One-eyed muskie's running hard from Medford to Mosinee. River marks its lonely path of blues and several teeth. And if you win, you get this slimy bucktail made of gold. But if you lose, the muskie gets your soul.
Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Steven, what's shaking?
I am
shaking and bacon?
Michael J. Fox.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I don't know. You asked me too quick. Anyway, well, it is a shocking twist. We're going into the 4th of July holiday. Can you believe that, Jay?
Just like that.
Peak season muskies. Peekaboo, Pikachu, the 4th of July. Again,
totally. And the weather is cooperating, by the way, around here. Holy cow, did it get hot and humid today.
Hot and humid.
Yeah, you wouldn't even believe it.
I'll tell you, I can believe it. Trust me. I went out on the boat this morning just for a... I thought I was going to go have a little run around, you know. Still had a little stretch of water I could wet my weasel on, and miserable hot.
Why is that? Yeah.
Oh, just hot and miserable and humid. Big storms going through and all that stuff. So, looking to head up north, and the cool thing is this: it might be hot outside, but the deals, Jay, are going to be cool with the Muskie Shop Bash.
Biggest sale of the year, July 18th, Saturday.
Saturday.
3. Yep. Be there or be square.
Come for the 4-hour split ring symposium.
Oh, man. That's just one of the things we got in store.
Got that. Who knows? We got tricks up our sleeve. We got a special visitor coming. I need to call him and make sure he's good.
We do?
Yes, more on that next week. But
okay.
I think I called you yesterday and said, "Oh crap, here we go. I have to
You're
pack.
Like, I'm coming to your house pretty soon."
I was literally walking around in my headphones yesterday. I was like, "Okay, and I got to reload gear. I have to re-gear entirely. I'm looking at a pile of Titans on top of my workbench here that need to get ready for Canada and the Northwoods and all that stuff and getting gear together. So it's crazy.
Well, tell your wife to email me your schedule when she has a chance.
No one knows. I'll be at ICAST. I know that much.
Yep.
That's going to be exciting. And then
that's a few days before the bash. Yep.
I'll be there for a few days. And then the bash.
Where is it this year?
It's always in Orlando, baby. Sunny. It'll be nice and cool there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will be.
You go from swamp to swamp, if you will. So, no, it's crazy. People are firing off. We're into peak muskie season for most people. Talked to Dr. Bob just a little bit ago. He got him a nice one yesterday. And, you know, you got a lot of different bites going on. Talked to Danny last night. He's grinding. It's funny. They're in that full tizzy mode there in Canada, Jay, if you can imagine. You haven't been on the water for a minute. Those boys are hard to get a hold of, so you'll have a musky report.
Yeah, and he's just got a million guide trips lined up and all that. He's just going 100 miles an hour.
he actually woke me up. I went to bed early like an old man, and about 11 o'clock, the phone rings. Like, I just got off the water. It's like, you know, headphones in. I'm trying to listen to my Star Wars books, Jay, and here's Danny. You know, you gotta know what's happening. Gotta stay up on your Star Wars books, and here comes Son of Herbeck bothering me. But
you're right when you say that there's a lot of different types of bites going on right
now.
I concur.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount of stuff going on. And Jay, you'll have a fresh Northwoods Muskie Report. Is that tomorrow, correct? Something like
Wednesday.
That? Wednesday.
Yeah, got a good guest or two lined up. That's going to be a secret. So, I'm excited about it.
Very good. Very good. So, that's the latest and greatest. If you're heading towards the Northwoods, the Canada Boys Gotcha with Joe Cooper and Danny. They'll have you later this week and try to keep you squared away there so you know what's going on. Because there's, like, again, there's just so many bites going on where, you know, we get into that regionality thing. You know, I mean, what's happening right now in Canada is definitely different than what's happening in the Northwoods and a bit with the Minnesota. You got your open water thing. I was talking to Bob about, you know, you got people out there driving around. They got 43 scopes. You got people beating the edges. You got a lot of different things going on out there in the big bad world. So
he stuck his fish open water then? Like he was talking about a little bit last week?
Well, he was doing something different there. He wasn't driving around on 43 scopes or anything. But, yeah, just you have so many different patterns. And realistically, this time of year, when we get into, again, late June through July, July is not rocket surgery for muskie fishing, right? You don't have to be Dr. Bob to figure it out. However, I think what will really help most anglers, like you're just going out, and Jay, this is the typical, a lot of guys are doing this, you got the trip coming up, right? Just like I'm sitting here, I'm packing baits, I've got so much stuff to do. There's a tremendous amount of guys that's what's on their mind, right? You got you wetted your whistle, toot toot, right? You might have got out in your local waters, but a lot of guys have the trip coming up. July is the month of trips, right? You're going to Eagle. You're going to Lake of Woods. You're going to, heck, you might be going to Vermilion. Mm-hmm. You might be going to Bemidji. You might be going to Cass. You might be, you know, Chippewa Flowage. All of this, right? This is trip month. This is musky tourism at its peak starting now. So, obviously, that's why we do the during this time frame, why we do the Canada and the Wisconsin report and kind of for that. But the mindset is all the same. Okay? There are multiple things taking place. There is not one bite in July. They are not all in the weeds. They are not all in open water. Right?
Yeah.
There are multiple musky stagings. Huh?
Sorry, I think that's difficult to understand for a lot of anglers. I mean, I was talking to my buddy P the other day, and I told him about this Northwoods Fishing Report I'm doing. And he's like, oh, what's the bite been? You know, what's it? And he wanted to hear from me that there is one thing you needed to do. He doesn't musky fish too much,
right?
But very occasionally. So, and it's like I was trying to explain to him, that there's multiple different things going on all the time. So how to capitalize. Not easy, but
well,
you gotta put 2 + 2 doesn't always equal 4.
Right. But with that, what will happen? The trip angler, the guy that's going out on the trip, the typical thing that will happen, we've all been there. You're gonna start where you're comfortable, first and foremost. So why does Steve beat on bucktails mockingly for a year? For now, this time it all comes together, we hem it up right now. What you're going to innately do, most of you, right? Not all of you, some of you, most of you, you're going to revert to what is comfortable first and foremost. So are we prepared to explore the other opportunities if that game plan collapses? Right, you're going to Lake Succotoban, and for 3 years, the bucktail bite has been hot, right? And then you show up this year, and it's not delivering, right? So, scenario one, you go on your trip, you've got a preconceived notion, which is the dangerous part, a preconceived notion of what should be happening. You've bought all the baits in anticipation of what should be happening. What are you going to do when that's not happening? Or are you happy to go and spend you know, 6.5 days, 6, 5 nights. Well, you know, it's like when they give the free trip on a game show, Jay. 5 nights and 6 days in beautiful Cancun, right? You're going
to
go
doing the same thing, hoping for a bite to the, for a strike.
You're going
to
spend all this money and all this energy and all this time and all your hoping on your Lake of the Woods trip or whatever it is. Pick your Canada trip, pick your place. You're going to go out there. You bought the bakes, you watch the videos, you listen to all the podcasts, and then how long until you admit it's not panning out? They've got to be there. This will work. So, scenario one, don't try to force your will on the fish. Don't try to will what you wanted to happen or how you wanted it to unfold for too long. You're going to do it, right? Because you bought 15 bucktails because somebody said, this is the one, right? This is the latest and the greatest. This is the Alpha Omega Bucktail Extraordinaire Clanky Boy, right? Whatever, trademark. You're going to want to throw it. You're going to want to do that. Have a realistic game plan for how long you're going to allow yourself to do that before you say, we need to pivot. That's the hardest thing. That's scenario number one that everybody screws up. Because, Jay, you deal with it all the time at the store. This is why it's so relevant with Jay doing the report and the crew there, because so many people walk into the store. They've been up for 6 days and they don't get one, or they saw one, or, you know, that's what I'm trying to, I want everybody to avoid or get that in your head or have that in your game plan that you are not going to, you're going to execute the plan, but you're also going to be analytical enough to go, this isn't working. That's the number one killer of trips. Trying to force your will. This is what is happening. This is the bite. First and foremost, right? The second scenario is, you've taken in too much information and you're trying to do everything at once. Right? That's the other trip killer.
On top of, changing baits every forecast.
Well, pick your poison. Yeah. It can all. So, not doing enough, right? You've made up your mind. You think this is what's going to happen. You're going to do it and you're going to beat the brakes off whatever presentation you're convinced is going to work. Or you're now, the deck is full of baits. You're rotating between trolling passes, casting passes, vertical jigging, live scoping, and fly fishing. You're not doing anything well. That's the other thing. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to go, oh, this trip I'm going to master open water scoping. Short line, you know what I'm saying? Is you, everything's got to be balanced, and it's like, I actually said part of the book title in there. It's like, so the kind of the trope and what I'm getting is that back to the book or my line of thinking is ways analyze and execute, right? That's the subtext of the book, but is look at the scenario realistically. What are you dealing with? Then analytically go, what is the path of least resistance here? What is the most likely place that I'm going to run into the most fish? And when I said there's multiple bites going on at any given time, right? There's always a catchable fish. You just might not be anywhere near it, or you might be near it with the wrong thing. That's the dynamic of the dichotomy of musky fishing, period. But be willing to adjust. And like I said, don't be the guy that's doing too much either, right? And that's the danger of too much information or too much influence or too much, just too much of everything. You're sitting here, you got your like you, Jay, you said, the pile of baits. The pile of baits is flawed as badly as the one presentation motif is flawed, right? So, the guy that goes out, he's got the one bucktail and he just throws it, he turns the handle and waits for it to happen, right? Is most likely properly retrieving and all this different stuff, where the motif of too many baits on the deck, too much, are you doing all of them well? And are you implementing them where they should be? So just to refocus everybody on this is look at the baits as tools, right? Don't go, I need to throw this bait because I got it, or it's on the deck of the boat. You go, is this hitting my target depth? Is cover structure, what's happening climactically? Does this bait check the boxes, right? Now apply that same line of thinking to your methodology. Should I be trolling right now? Should I be casting? Should I be jigging? What should I be doing? Right? Don't take the extreme on either end. Don't just do one thing and don't do everything poorly, or don't, even if you're doing everything well, which is another thought. If you're doing everything well, not everything is in play. Use your analytical skills, or use the context clue that the lake is giving you, the weather's giving you, and all this to go, okay, these are the most logical areas to focus on. Right? Focus on those areas and then take what feedback or lack of feedback that you get and then move on.
Yeah, lack of feedback. Yeah, I think most anglers are going to start shallow. You know, I think most anglers, when they go out, are going to determine to themselves that it's just like, I got to check the weeds.
Which
at
is,
least as a starting point, you know, and it's like, well, that's great.
Which is,
you know, because there's probably always a percentage of fish in there, whether or not they're very active or not, remains to be seen. How long do you continue to pound the weeds after you don't get any feedback? And switch and get a little bit deeper, or depending on, you know, if you're in a current situation or a big lake or a small lake, maybe you're fishing a lake that's just, you know, some kind of shield lake that's just pure rock, or you're determined that, you know, rocks for you on last year's trips were great. You're fishing reefs, you know, the wind's coming in, everything's ideal, pretty good weather. Let's say it's cloudy. And it's not cold, it's just normal weather, and it's, you know, you got a nice cloudy day, there's some wind coming into this reef, you're fishing shallow, 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 and nothing happens.
Yeah.
You gotta at some point go, okay, spot number two, area number two, I shouldn't say spot, I know you hate that, but area number two, okay, you know, there's some bait here, there's some presence here, there's probably some fish here, but they're not active, we gotta do something different, we gotta move now.
Well, and it's again, you treat, and a lot of people treat home water and destination water differently. That's why kind of talking to the Canadian boys. That's why I'm pulling you back into the reality here, folks. Is there'll be a certain level of familiarity on both ends, right? But when I'm like the core of when I'm thinking about this destination or your trip, your fishing trip, right? That so many people do is they have that, again, the preconceived notion of the timing of when they're going, what they want to happen, right? Where, like you said, they're going to run to that shallow bite first. Well, when you're running to that shallow bite first, slow down enough to trust your electronics. You might not have the 3-point bait check set up yet. Don't go rush. Go, you know, okay, get your yayas out. Go beat the first weed bed because you know you want to do it. But after that, when you're going to your second area, start scanning as you're coming in, right? Pay attention, because there's so much lost time. There's so many missed fish and so many just squandered opportunities. Because of the nature of, okay, we're running and gunning, or, you know, you're operating out the last week's report, you're operating on guide rumors, you're operating on my buddy said, you're up the camp owner, they all lie, they're not going to tell you what's going on, right? So make sure you're gathering data and then start working towards, okay, I at least have some reference points now on this water, right? You have to establish that where you can get a baseline so you know what's going on. If not, you're just 6 days, you know, 6 nights and 7 days of clowning around and hoping you run into one, right? And What happens is this is the test of when you do a trip or you do a different area or do whatever. This is a test of patterning skills, right? First and foremost, how strong is your patterning? Some people just bang, they get into it. The fish are eating double eights or 8-9 staggers and then the weeds. And they were lickety split right on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not working out that way, the only thing that will save you is your ability to look at the system with what data you can get your hands on and create patterns. That's it.
And you do that. What? Like no one I know. I mean, when you go out, whether it's a new lake or a fairly familiar lake, you are quiet.
Yes, as you, for once.
It's just like, don't say anything to Steve.
Leave me alone, yeah.
Leave him alone. He's checking stuff out thoroughly on electronics, you know?
Yeah. No, that is true. Yeah, that is true.
A lot of sounds like that up there. You make that sound a lot, too. Yeah.
Sometimes just stare off into space and shake slightly. Ah, it's coming.
Yeah, he's checking. You know. Patterning.
No, it's they patterning. Check. Well, yeah. And it's it, a lot of that, and you know, heck, I mean, I've ran out with different podcast people or different people over the years, and that's the first move. I don't the rod's not, the first on if I've not been somewhere in a while, right? It doesn't. It's like
right.
Lake I'm visiting again that I haven't been on in a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
First thing you're doing, I mean, just figure out what's going on. You can shave a day of screwing around. If you spend 30 minutes observing versus a whole day of just striking out, you can. I mean, I'll trade 30 minutes of observation versus wasting a day of a trip. Any day.
And it's not like it's some magic thing to do. It's not like you're going to boat 5 fish in an hour after doing that.
No.
But you're upping your odds big time and you're eliminating a waste of time.
Which is
like that.
Which is also, too, a lot of this was in my head. I talked to somebody, actually, a couple people. The buddy of mine sent me a text. He was on some really tough water where they lost a big one. And I think it was the only one they ran into. And then somebody else was on their trip. And a bunch of different trip kind of interactions this week on that thought process or how to find fish or where to find fish. And to be honest with you, something to consider in patterning, right? Or creating a pattern out of nothing. And it's difficult. Now, it is analytical skills, right? I would say that 90% of the way I fish is observation, right? Of just okay. I'm not the guy. I don't run and gun. I'm not. You brought up kind of like going down the lake with me. I'm not trying to make it like, oh, this is what I do. But I don't think I ever kind of run and gun until I run into it.
Yes. Yes.
I don't do that. I can tell you handily I don't do that. But most of the time, not too many times can I recall that I've just been just out of the game. And that is from just going, okay, what am I going to look at? And so if I'm showing up somewhere, I guess this is where we're headed, Jay. I didn't know we were headed this way. We never knew. How are we going to pattern a lake out of nowhere?
Predetermined, you always have three areas, primary areas. Depending on the familiarity with the lake, I'm not saying it's a brand new lake, right. You know, but you will look at the map. We'll all look at the map.
Well, we've done that though. Hold on. Mm-hmm. We've done in real time. I'm not contradicting at all. 'Cause you're right. You and I over all these years, we've done that multiple times where, okay, we're on so-and-so lake and it's going to storm or we're not getting the results that we wanted for filming or we're not getting the results. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, we're out with so-and-so and you make that lake move. And there's been a lot of times, especially years and years ago, where I've never even been in the county, much less on that lake.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And to what you're saying is looking at a system as a whole at a glance. which that should be a whole article in of itself. I'm thinking out loud here as always. But what you're getting at is, okay, how are we going to pick three areas off the rip? Right? How do we identify at a glance? You've got X, Y, and Z body of water. How do we look at this digital map, or you're looking on your phone? Where do I go? First and foremost place I always look for is entering water. Where is water entering or exiting if available? That is like number one. Is there a creek? And this does not have to be a major river. I'm thinking of one lake.
It is your strongest area of current.
Current and also of force, right? Even a small creek will congregate bait fish. Heck, I've seen small creeks. I've seen small creeks that congregate crayfish, then smallies and muskies, and you know, so that is like a point that is or a flow. And when I say a creek, I mean, I'm talking like you could just walk through it in your sneakers and they not get wet. I've targeted on those areas and expanded out from that. So first thing I'm looking for is that. I would say in perennially doing so is where is quote unquote the nursery? Every lake's got one. And bigger lakes might have two or three, but where is that area that is, okay, northerly facing? Probably, and I'm talking at a guess. You've got 5 minutes to look at this map. Where is the north-facing place that's probably had the weeds first? Where would they most likely, if I had to guess, where's the spawning grounds in this lake? It's shallow, it's weeds, it's whatever, right? And if you think, Jay, if you go through in your head of all the adventures out on the big pond, I'm sure you're thinking of some of these places. Right, that are like resonating.
Sure.
That's number two. Number three for me is where's the biggest point in the lake?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You think about, for example, I'm just going through Freddy's Point. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, or this and that. Those are the three things that I'm looking for. Off the rip. Where is there entering water? What else? I mean, if there's not, right? If there's not, let's say that you look at a map and we're just going off the riff. Oh, potential spam is calling. Should we have potential spam on as a guest, Jay?
Let's see. Outstanding idea.
Hold on. Let me answer this.
Okay.
Hello? Can you hear me, Jay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, potential spam's not there.
They don't even speak anymore.
We're probably recorded from some. It's probably their voices.
Hi, guys. You're live on the podcast.
Right. Exactly. I was really hoping. Hello, my name is Derek Turner. Anyway,
would you like to refinance your mortgage?
Long story short. Let's say there's no creek. There's just nothing. Okay. You can't see that. Another place, what are you thinking? What's something else that just jumps out to you, Jay? Like, boom, that's the third. If this is completely no entering water that you can find on a map
like,
or even...
Like a really good-looking bay with all the ingredients, you know, deep water accessibility nearby, all that stuff.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. I mean,
every lake's got a bay, you know, even round lakes have a bay, you know, structurally of some sort. So you can always determine that, you know, this one looks a lot better than that one by looking at the map.
Hold on. Let me call you right back because this sounds muty now after they tried to merge this. Hold on. Sorry about that. I tried to answer the spam and then it changed the audio for some reason.
Well, hopefully you get another one.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Sounds normal now. But something else that pops in my mind, let's get back to the crux of her here. You know, I'm going to look for the entering water. I'm going to look for what I call the nursery. Where's that north-facing bay that's kind of like guaranteed shallow vegetation, all that stuff, right? I'm looking for the biggest point. If entering water's not in, add it as your fourth or add it as your one of your top three. Is there any kind of reef or island, right? Pretty easy to see on a map, obviously.
Sure.
That is gonna be productive. So breaking down a new place, those are the three, four things that knee-jerk reaction I'm looking for, right? How do you break something down, or you're going on that trip we've been talking about, the hypothetical trip? How are we going to immediately take those four elements? Let's go with the four. We got four elements. How are we going to determine where to start, why to start, how to start, and what bait to throw?
Right.
That's the next thing. So now you have four places to go fishing, right? But you also have multiple methodologies and a tremendous amount of baits. We're going to look at, in my opinion, first and foremost, where is forage staged? Right?
Right on. Yep.
So we're on, imagine, dig, if you will, this picture. You're on this new lake, or you're on your trip. You haven't been to the lake in a year, so you know where we're sitting here. Your first 10 minutes on this thing. You've looked at your map. You've found those elements that stand out, like, you know, boom. I am immediately going to my down scan. If you have live scope, it can be useful to check how much the bait fish are moving at this point, right? Whatever electronics methodology you prefer. But I like my downscan so I can go at speed, right? I can put that bad boy at 6, high 5, 6, something like that. And, okay, I'm going to check in and around these things I've marked. So my first move is I launch the boat. What is the closest element of these four? What do I have near me from the launch? Okay, let's say I've got the island. Right, you got these four elements, three elements, whatever you found. There's an island. Okay, well, let me check that first, since it's closest. And then I'm just going to go into that area. And I'm looking at the map to get to where I need to be, obviously. But more importantly, I'm looking at what I call the contact point, kind of coined the term of when the main basin changes from main basin to structure. Right? When is that going to start coming up? When is the first moment of rise? So I'm driving into this island and I'm going, where does the basin in this kind of start separating from one another?
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Once you got that, boom, drop a pin. Mm-hmm. You have your first reference point. And you can do this at speed. I mean, this is not like grueling at all. So I'm driving to this hypothetical island, never been on the lake. I'm in the main basin, and I'm coming towards this thing. Okay, where do I see? Even on the map, you might see it differentiate on the map. You might see it differentiate on your down scan. You start seeing change adjacent to a new element. Mark it. Keep sliding in. I'm looking for bait. Is there bait congregated at this contact point? Is there bait congregated 100 yards off of it? And start analyzing and start paying attention. If you're coming into this island that you can visually see, you're coming out of, say, 30 feet, not untypical, right? So I'm coming out of 30 feet driving to this island. Oh, I'm marking bait at 8. Oh, I'm close to the island and I'm still marking bait at 8. I'm a cast off the island, I'm marking bait at 8. All right, what does that tell us? You probably need to be targeting somewhere in that mid-depth zone as far as height of your presentation, right? So we found that there's bait. We have found structurally an island adjacent to a main basin. Sure sounds juicy. And we've marked bait fish at 8 feet. What are we going to throw? Not a bucktail. I'm going to throw possibly a crank, probably a kraken, right? And then the seasonality place, let's just keep it at summer. At that point, okay, I got 8 foot deep bait fish. Muskies are most likely staged in the largest numbers on level with them or slightly below.
Yeah.
And that's a matter of what I'm getting at is every decision made there is not because, oh, that island looks good to me. Let's go fish it. Right? We determined these are the things that are likely to hold fish. We're coming in, we're observing the bait. So location, bait fish equals presentation, right? You can get far more dialed in than that, but that's kind of that off the off the rip kind of methodology. What were we going to say, my man?
And about the bait fish, you know, define scattered bait fish versus bait fish balls, obviously, and fast moving bait fish.
That is that. Therein lies the devil.
There you go.
There are multiple bait fish reeds. So I think fundamentally, let's leave at the breaking down the new there, right? So now let's say we're on our downscan. You can be on downscan, side scan, I don't care. You can have your buddy's head underwater as long as you can see the bait fish, right? And we got a read on it. However you choose to get your electronic information doesn't matter to me. There is a read on bait fish. Again, when Jay said scattered, I hear people say this all the time. If you are uninitiated or don't spend too much time on the water, they all look scattered to you. Scattered is a loose term. Now, I will tell you my definition of scattered. Scattered is when they are broken up into small groups or individuals, right? Because most likely they are actively predating, or B, there's a predator in their midst that is breaking them up from congregating.
It could be, right, right.
Right? That is what I define as, quote unquote, scattered, right? And I'm sure I'm contradicting myself at some point because it's just so normal to say scattered bait fish. That is a different read. So if I see scattered bait fish, that means activity level of the bait fish themselves is high and or predators is high, and it's usually one and the same, right? So the bait fish are active, therefore the predators will be active. Now, the other read is stratified bait fish. This is where people be like scattered bait. When I see bait fish that are in loose groups at a bunch of different levels, that's a whole different read than all the bait fish are eight and they're loosely grouped up and there's like little pods, right? That's a different read. So to answer that, of like the activity level is going to dictate approach quite a bit. So if I see the stratified bait, or you just see what looks like stars on LiveScope, you just see bait everywhere. Rarely is that great. Right? Or on your downscan, bait is everywhere. That bait fish read to me is, okay, you better get lucky. Right? There's no concentration of bait in a meaningful way. And if there's not concentrations of things in a meaningful way, that means there's not concentrations of predators, which means the predators are harder to pattern. Right? So in bait fish and reading bait fish, I am looking for patterns within patterns, right? So bait fish are at eight. Let's go back to that trope, right? Okay, they're at eight. Are they in very tightly balled groups? Are they in very loose groups? That, like, to that point will change that read on the water entirely. So that will actually dictate quite often to me of how intense a presentation is, right? So bait fish read to me dictates intensity, right? So it doesn't dictate depth. The bait fish's depth dictates to me at what my target depth is, which the target depth kind of helps me align with what the presentation type is, but the bait fish reader and their activity levels is your quote unquote, your speed or how intensely you're retrieving. So that's the read I'm getting from them, right? If you have on scope, you'll see active schools. Sometimes you'll catch largemouth, smallmouth, different kind of predatory fish feeding on those things. That's immense amount of information there, right? But let's, to the core of the matter, like on your down scan, a lot of times if you just find a bait school or find bait fish, you don't have to just keep cruising the whole time. If you just kind of either circle back on them or stay on them, try to stay in their neighborhood, you can get that same information, right? Did it for years of going, oh, I've stayed with this bait score. I've double backed on them. They're in the exact same place. So I was able to just do a U-turn in the boat, and I hit them again, right? They're not moving. They're not active. I probably need to slow my speed and slow my intensity, right? Whereas highly active bait fish, do you want to be the slowest, most boring presentation when there are highly active bait fish around? Probably not, right? So bait fish reads, and bait fish don't have to be a minnow school. This can be walleye, it can be anything. The activity level of the bait fish is going to, like I said, dictate that intensity level of a retrieve with whatever given presentation it is. You know, if they're in the top 4 feet of the water column and they're going haywire and there's feeding on terrestrial insects, you know, they're landing all this stuff. Yeah, get out the blades, get out the topper and go haywire. If that activity level is intense and that activity bandwidth is happening at 10 to 15, yeah, break out the Kraken and go haywire. Right? You're serving the same master as far as intensity, but at a different depth, because the likelihood of a muskie that's predating at 15 and doing well or feels like it has a, and this is the way I conceptualize it, if there's activity level at 15, let's, you know, 15 to 12, and a muskie is staged there, he's anticipating because of the activity level that he's going to be a success. It's going to be a successful predation there. He's probably not going to waste the calories or the energy to come up the 15 feet to hit something that's zipping over his head, right? It's the same proximity thing that I talk about, or we talk about, which is proximity presents opportunity. So the read of the bait fish, I think, is it's not one is more important. It's like, okay, location scouting and then scouting the viability of a location based on bait fish and then selecting lures based on running depth on the depth of bait fish and the intensity of the presentation based on their activity level.
Yeah, at the very, very least, it's going to dial you in to proximity, and that's half the battle sometimes.
Half the battle, which is there's plenty of times I've thrown probably baits that were going, knowing me, far, going way too slow, right? But hooked up on fish because of sheer proximity and opportunity.
Mm.
And that's the way I like read the bait, like bait fish. So it's like, again, you know, so we don't get too down the rabbit hole of new lake, new experience, or it's the first time this year. Staging of all this can change, and definitely that bait fish read or the fish that are there and present is going to change daily, sometimes hourly, which is that's the best information you got, right? Something I've learned over the years for sure, and it holds true just about anywhere I go. And I'll say this for basins, because you can't say, okay, Lake of the Woods, 90% of the fish are in 10% of the water, right? Well, no. It'd be awesome if they all ran to like one little bay, but melee, right? Freaking, we were trolling two lines casting. It was, you couldn't, but what I'm getting at is in basins, even, right? Part of my thing of wanting to know where bait fish are before I start fishing is, yeah, checking out their staging, but also too, confirming their presence. Right, the lowest common denominator in a lake, whatever it might be, let's take I just said Lake of the Woods, so let's take Lake of the Woods, a perch, right? There's a lot of them, got a lot of those there, walleyes, whatever lake you want to, whatever it is, look for that lowest common denominator and where the most of them are and branch out from there is pretty solid, right? And a lot of this, Jay's, we're horsing it out loud here. A lot of this is systemic of comfort with your electronics, right? A lot of that comes from comfort with your electronics. And even too, this, you know, here, it's like always the theoretical musky podcast with us, but let's say take that out of the equation. There's a way to do it too. So let's take all of this. Let's back it up. Let's say you got one graph on your boat you don't know how to use and you still want to accomplish this goal.
Mm-hmm.
There's two ways. Way one, which is the visual way, which is using man optics exclusively, you can do some pretty quick damage. Now, it starts shallow, but it is a matter of going into the shallows, not making a cast, and observing a lot of times that inside edge that is often overlooked behind weeds or that extremely tight edge.
Yeah, for sure. Right, right.
That's one of the best visual cues there is. I mean, if you've been on a guide trip with me, the number one thing, I could fall off most docks because the number one thing I'm doing when I'm walking down a dock is I'm looking around. And sure fire, if there are bluegills, there are perch, there is stuff up and crawling around a dock, there's active right. fish, okay, that is a massive indication that predators are either in the shallows with them or on the immediate outside edge. Right, so that's a quick read if you're just to the visual thing.
That is a quick read, yeah, I agree.
And duplicate that. Now, one thing you can say, sometimes man-made structures like that will tend to hold fish when they shouldn't. A trick, though, if you're breaking down a new body of water, is just go to somewhere that is not influenced by a man-made structure and just look at it that same inside edge with your peepers, right? And again, none of this involves you throwing a musky lure, if you haven't noticed. None of this yet involves throwing a musky lure, by the way. But that is if you have no electronics or nothing. Another really great way to do this is patterning off of small fish where you can. I used to do this all the time because you realize I'm not a dinosaur yet. But, you know, we didn't have all the mapping. We didn't have everything when I started guiding. Is you can get a lot of traction with a small downsized walleye crank. Right. And I used to back in the day, and it depends on where you're at, where you can have multiple lures on one line, is send them out, right? Send down one deep. Say we're checking an area where it's like 20 and we want to check the upper thing, is you can do kind of a modified Burger King rig or two lines, and depends on how many lines you control. Is I would come through with basically stuff that there's no way if there's a fish there, it's not going to get eaten. To kind of get into bait, which would be like, okay, the tiny, tiny little MEPs for your shallow, just a small, small walleye crank on the bottom, and then a mid-depth. And you would spend 20 minutes, you just start hitting walleye or start hitting perch, and you knew something was going on, mm-hmm. right? That is if you, like, a really good no electronics, no, to get that same information, you go, like, there are baits, like a white rooster tail, Jay. I don't think there's a lake on planet Earth I couldn't catch a fish on that, right? To sure. find staging. And if you can't, you're probably in the wrong part of the lake, right? So you don't have to be completely electronics reliant. It's far easier and it's far more effective and far more efficient. But, you know, using time in non-musky casting ways to maximize that. And I mean, all of this is like, let's say you go out and, Jay, you're a kayak angler wanting to catch a muskie on a lake you've never been to. You got mm-hmm. your phone and you can feed out a bait and you can cast, you know, you can basically road troll that thing if you're trying to figure it out. I think a lot of it too is the willingness to just spend a few minutes in observation. Too, if you're electronics, if either you're bad at electronics, right, or you don't have electronics, you can still get a lot of leverage in the situation by stopping and again looking around and then being observant of things. A lot of the patterning things you hear about or we talk about of, okay, whether it be wind, whether it be this, whether it be that, it's going to be logic based. Right. And that will come down to going, oh, there was a west wind for 3 days before I got here. Now it's flat. Right. That's normal, or east wind, or pick your wind direction. But it's not blowing today. But you looked in your phone at the weather history and it did it for 3 days. Well, let's make sure that we stop. We identify where we're at. Go, which way's west here? right? That's pretty core. And it's shocking how many times, and Jay's watched me do this to people. They didn't know I was doing it to them, but I'll say it now. What's one of my first things if I end up on another musky guide, quote unquote, or guy's boat, Jay? What do I ask them? Which way's north?
Oh, okay.
I
guess you do. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it goes unnoticed most of the time. Because I'm thinking of one. It was one over by Conover, and I gave you a look like, oh, God. Not Josh, but somebody else. But nonetheless, it's like, okay, let's have when we're on the water, let's have a rudimentary bearing of cardinal direction. Let's start there. We need a rudimentary bearing of cardinal direction. Because how could one, if you don't know the cardinal directions from the lake, how could you even take into consideration wind? Right? If you don't know the shoreline you're looking at is north, south, east, west, or Zanzibar, how can one go, oh, there's an east wind, it's going to turn them on, or it's a south wind, or it's a this wind? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to have that rudimentary thing too, and kind of that overall read. Jay, what else? I'm prattling on here. I could sit here and just, you know, I'm down the rabbit hole bad already. But what else would you say as far as like, okay, what are some house cleaning things to have ready for the big musky tripperooski or just breaking down new water?
In terms of breaking down, I mean, I like the skinny water valuation, you know, like the, you know, the inner weed line and all that. You know, that's something where sometimes your electronics aren't going to tell you much anyway. Yeah. You're rolling over some 3-foot areas. I mean, yeah. Fish scatter, you know, and you're not going to even read them. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, did that the other day, you know, and it was like, you know, started picking up walleyes, you know, mm-hmm. Shallow, just it's like, okay, something's going on here. They're not normally here. So, you're saying, okay. I think we covered some really cool stuff, yeah. Or you did. Terms of, you know, how to think and how to prepare mentally for you know, your one big trip in the summer.
Yeah, I mean,
whether the lake's familiar or not.
Yeah,
it's all, you know, these are important things. You know, it's just like diagnose 3 spots. Don't just approach it as a run and gun situation. Yeah. I mean, because you
diagnose 3 different kind of spots.
Well, yeah, they'd be different. Sure. Yeah.
That's the thing is of just if you dedicate that 30 minutes or whatever time you're willing to do, right? It's the same thing and I say this again because the caveat being I've talked to a bunch of people this week where it's like, got my butt kicked. Got this, got that, which is, you said something, even if it's a new lake, there is something, and I've struggled with this, admittedly, right? Hey, confession. Over-familiarity. And that's a danger, too, which is you can't stop patterning or you can't stop being open to what's going on because over-familiarity will kick your butt, too.
That's when you get stuck in that grind of just doing the same thing over and over because it's always produced. Oh, I know this lake.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. They're here. There's fish here. There's fish here. Let's stick with it.
Right. And it's a balance of, again, you said that with my thing. I've said stick and stay and make them pay instead of running and gunning all the time. But also, too, that balance of balancing history, balancing over familiarity with
right. The balancing conditions. History versus checking all the boxes.
You know, that's Jay, all of this just boils down to the sheer fact of we don't live outside. Right? You come home, your couch is hopefully where you left it. Maybe your wife isn't, but your couch is where you left it, right? Or whatever.
Yeah, trust the fact that you are not familiar with that body of water. I don't care if you think you are. You're not.
You never are. And I mean, it's actually, I'm not shilling books, but I put that in there because it's just like, you know, you talk 20 plus years on the same body of water, I don't even know hours, you know, it's in all this time I've spent and you go, huh, didn't know that was there. Right. Or you learn a little bit more. And I think that's the fun part of it, at least for me, is the discovery or the patterning nature of it. Also, too, I mean, before I just go down another immense rabbit hole, when it comes to patterning or it comes to whatever your application, heck, this could be your week, this could be your Saturday trip, right? You're not going on a trip. All this plays for everything, right? You could be doing a staycation or just fishing weekends. All of this is the same. It's just trying to refocus folks on it. But realistically, you know, when you look at patterning as a whole, patterning for muskies is often the stacking of different factors, right? And that is, let me throw this out. And I should say trying to find a pattern is the stacking and the logical breaking down of multiple factors stacked on top of one another. Sorry if it's too heady, but it's true. Okay.
Well, it's an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
Well, it's also a fish that has to do things, right? And it's got to feed itself, and it's going to be comfortable, which is when we're looking at all these scenarios, we're looking for stacked factors that compound into a logical starting point or a pattern, right? So why, let's go even more meta on it here. Why not? I'm just riffing anyway. Why are we looking at, I even ask myself, why would one look at a creek, an island, a point, and what we called like a nursery area or that area? Well, because over experience, there tends to be a muskie or a populace of muskies using those kinds of areas if present, right?
A focused area of feeding.
Right, exactly. Or structurally, these areas tend to be areas that they use, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one stack. How will they be using them today? Seasonality. I shouldn't even say today. How will they be using it this time of year? Seasonality will dictate. How are they using it today? Weather and current conditions will dictate, right? And in that stack of how they're using it today, the bait fish are influencing that in real time, right? And if you look at it, it's just a stacking of things. There you go. That is just like all the way to hook and mouth, which is, are the bait fish active? That compounds, right? That compounds in the decision-making process, where I think a lot of times we get into what's the bait, what's the hot bait, right? We've joked about that for years. What's the hot bait?
Well, that's what we want to that's what people want to hear on the fishing
that's what
report.
They want to hear, right? What's the hot, and you got to give it to them, and you should. This is what, and it's a fishing report. There's a difference between the hot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's a bait that has produced, but it's not. It's never the hot bait. There is never one thing that, again, because muskies are
not eating
active
lures
in different areas, and right. There's a million different patterns going on. So,
right.
Yeah.
They're different patterns. They're also actively not eating bulldogs. None of them woke up this morning and said, "Ooh, I want to eat a bulldog." They want to eat something that lure is doing something that emulates a natural, you know what I'm saying? It's not that these are all fake. We're interplaying in their world with things, right? Yeah. And I mean, I'm not knocking a bulldog. Great bait, caught a million fish on them. But what I'm saying is, it's not, they didn't, ooh, I really want to eat a Bondi bait today. No, that's so the bait is not hot. Baits are tools that get you to where they are, or shays, blah, 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 right? The rabbit hole goes on and on and on. That's how you end up with hot baits, because there will be a pattern of muskies, a certain populace of muskies will be doing something so predictable, right? That old Lenny Kretzbaugh can walk down to the muskie shop, buy him a hog wobbler special.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's from Medford. Right. Yeah,
of course, whatever. Yeah. But the point is, that's what a pattern is. It is so, it is exploitable that a neophyte person can take a bait, and because that bait hits the target depth that they're at, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, fish on in. That therein lies the devil in the details, where you ask, like, we, it goes back to, I was talking to Bob, and you know, there's an open water pattern that happens. A majority of fish in open water. What's everybody else doing? Banging the bank when there's a minority of fish.
Yep.
Right? So are we fishing for the majority, or are we fishing for the most active? And like I said, stacking those factors of what bait do I use? The bait's not the answer, right? The bait is not going to answer the question. All the other questions equal what bait to use or lure to use, right? And when you hear about they're really on this bait, okay? Well, are they, you know, swimming across the entire lake to come eat it? No. Right? They're not waiting in line like at McDonald's. Like we do for an Egg McMuffin, okay, it is, this bait has the right action and running depth and overall size, and when worked appropriately, it is at the appropriate bandwidth or proximity to fish of what they want to see. And so it's like how you choose to solve the equation, per se, right? What's the hot bait will get you a bite. If you get the hot bait and you get on the water in the time frame the hot bait is working, you're golden, baby. Don't think about it. But that's the thing of patterning, is like, don't let your bait be the feedback. Let everything in and around you tell you, okay, this is the lure I need to target this area, blah 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 blah, all the shit I just said, right? So that's kind of the oh man, let's make musky fishing not fun, shall we, Jay? What's the hot bait this week on the Northwoods Fishing Report? Jay, what do you got there? What are
You'll
they
have to tune in to
You'll
find
have
out
to tune in.
Wednesday night.
Sometimes I don't even like myself anyway.
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw. Man, sorry for the immense rabbit hole, but you know where I'm going here, folks. Or you don't. Doesn't matter to me. No skin off my nose.
I just got distracted here. There's like a 40-mile-an-hour winds just all of a sudden. There must be a storm coming around the corner or something like
there
that.
There will be. Sorry.
It's just crazy hot and humid. Just winds kicking up and we're just howling.
Kicking
whole,
off.
Whole house is shaking.
If the house is a shaking. Anyway, well, I've burnt the whole show with that rabbit hole. Somebody's
throwing a bucktail right now and catching one.
Somebody's catching one on a bucktail.
Some other guy.
Somebody. It clicked with somebody. You know, that's it. You get out there, Jay. You do your best. That's all you can do. Don't overthink it. Throw a bucktail at the weeds, Jay. Just burn them. Anyway, I give up, folks. Good night,
James. All right, Stevie.
We'll hit
Thanks,
the
guys.
Guys, we got a bunch of Q&A that I just completely shat upon by not answering it and just to sit there.
No, all the more next week.
Well, I think somebody that's clicking. Trust me, there's gold in them that are heels of rambling. I promise you. Jay Bird, say good night.
Bye, guys.
Later.
Thanks.
I am a musky looking for a meal today. So try to trick me with your reel today. I'm getting closer, make you feel in pain.